Just like in any other business, I think the hardest part is growth. And if you do it wrong, that's a quick way to die. It requires a certain number of hands. It wasn't until I started learning that I needed to train and delegate some of the things that I was doing that we were really able to reach kind of that scalability and off hands that we needed. So kind of my thing has been, you know, let go and let grow. And that was the challenge for me, learning to change my mindset from like tech founder, where you have astronomical growth, to something like this, where you need to be slow and intentional with how you grow. It's also much more capital intensive. It's people intensive. Like, our whole brand vision has been to deliver highest quality meals, highest quality ingredients, made from scratch at a price that's affordable and accessible to as many people as possible. Lived overseas and coming here, like, that's been such a shocker. And really lately, diving into more of the science behind why we're so sick in America and how bad our food system is, like, we're really at the forefront trying to eradicate that, change that, you know, get into hospital systems, you know, rebrand people's minds, educate, you know, and push against this huge big ag, big food system that really poisoning us.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Duck Pond Podcast. Today we have Marco Biscarini, co-founder of Vibrant Meals, a guy who left tech behind to build ready-to-eat meals that are changing how people in the American South eat. From a 600 square foot studio kitchen to multiple production sites and an eight-figure growth with his wife, Romana, they're both on a mission to make healthy eating convenient and delicious. Marco, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ryan. That was probably the best pronunciation of my last name that I've heard in a long time.
Thank you.
So well done there.
Thank you. So before we dive into Vibrant Meals, I want you to tell me, you know, who Marco is and what's your story starting Vibrant Meals and
Yeah, man. As well. I'll give you the really brief backstory because there's a lot of context and color here, but was born in San Diego. Then when I was three or four, my family, Italian, moved us back to Italy. We bounced around between Lake Como, Florence, then ended up in Rome for about 15 years. Then I went to boarding school. In that time, I met my now wife's aunt and grandmother, who were neighbors of ours in Rome. And then when I moved back to California for school, that's how I met my wife, was through her dad, who was living in Laguna Beach at the time. And yeah, so Vibrant Meals was birthed from really the passion from my wife and the experience that I had from VC-backed tech companies. And so I'd experienced doing biz dev and also some of the technology side, and told her, hey, you know, what you're doing is awesome. She was meal prepping for UFC fighters and a couple of different celebrities, and saw what she was doing. It had massive growth and potential, but it couldn't be scaled if she stayed on as the chef. So I challenged her and said, hey, why don't you move out to Tennessee? Join me out here, or I move back to California and I'll build you a website and we'll get this thing going. So that was end of 2016. We officially formed the company in 2017, and the rest is history. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Really love that. And really love how you're building this with your wife. And that does make me ask, how have you been making that work, and what's it like building this, you know, with your partner?
Yeah. So we actually retired her in 2019, end of the year. So we had our first daughter, Joya, was born March 20, 2020. And that kind of forced us to make some different decisions because we didn't want to outsource help at the time or put her in daycare. And so we actually made the decision for her to stay home. And honestly, that was a good transition for us. Working together was some of the highest highs and lowest lows. You know, it obviously was cheaper because we didn't have to pay ourselves much at all. And so we were able to grow it and scale it on a shoestring budget. And we've bootstrapped the company. Yeah, just able to grow and delegate different parts of the business. Obviously, we had to replace her role in the company. She brought a lot of the creativity to the meals and the passion behind the food. So that was obviously a lot harder to find. But eventually, we found people that were talented that could kind of fit that need and continue chugging along. And then four girls later, here we are.
Love that. So definitely priorities changed for your wife as time went on. And it really sounds like she was a part of the company and really involved in the beginning. And as she set the blueprint, the foundation for Vibrant Meals, you know, both of you guys bring different strengths to Vibrant Meals. And how did these two strengths collide early on in the production? And what's it like now since then, since your wife has left?
Yeah. So, like I was saying, I'm really passionate about systems, building things that have growth and that have opportunity to scale. And you can't really scale without systems in place. So, back when she was meal prepping for these UFC fighters and different athletes and celebrities, she was kind of just fly by the seat of her pants, you know, making food in her kitchen at home, putting it in glass Tupperware, delivering it to these people. Sometimes even cooking in their own kitchens. So again, she brought the passion behind it. She was also training for WWE herself at the time, and that's kind of how she got really into that space. And then that, with kind of the experience that I brought from the tech world and growing and scaling a couple of different businesses, I think was the right combination that was needed at the time. And we were kind of early onto the scene. I mean, meal prep, especially in the Southeast, was something very much unknown at the time. So we had to do a lot of education early on. And the educating really took a lot of work. And then that got accelerated through COVID years. So we didn't have to educate as much and became more about, you know, differentiation at that point. You know, how do we differentiate for the from the rest?
And diving into some of that education, what would you tell people, and how do you differentiate yourself now from the competition?
Yeah, so early on, so meal prep, the idea was pretty foreign, except for in the CrossFit world. So we really came on the scene when CrossFit was at its prime, at its peak, and kind of rising. So we rose with that wave. And then we learned that it wasn't just these high performance athletes that wanted our food. It was people that needed everyday convenience, but also wanted the health to go with it. So that was a lot of the education early on. It's surprising how few people understood what portion control was. So that was very important for us early on to kind of explain portion control. And then from portion control, then you get into more minutia, you know, you niche down and say, all right, well, why are we gluten-free and dairy-free? Well, we're trying to avoid any inflammation in the body by skirting around, you know, these things that typically cause inflammation in most people. And that just ultimately helps people have less bloat. You know, they can digest and metabolize better. They feel better. They can perform better. So that was kind of the trajectory of education early on. And then, what was your second question to that?
Let's see here. Well, I definitely want to dive deeper into the products themselves. I did see that you guys have over 50 products, and I did want to ask, how do you guys manage something like that? You know, there's so many products, so many different variations, so many
Yeah, I mean,
sizes.
we've built early on, you know, maybe we had 12 recipes at any given time. So a lot less variability, a lot less complexity. Over time, as we've grown our team, we've been able to add more complexity to the menu. And it is complex. You know, we use a lot of the same base ingredients, but now we manage anywhere between 50 to 58 SKUs. So there's a lot, and we manufacture all of those products. So it is a lot to manage all of the raw goods being received, production, yields, you know, holding temperatures, timelines of when to cook what and, you know, how long, just batch cooking everything. There's a lot that we had to learn along the way. There's very few manuals that exist for food production at scale, right? We're not a restaurant. We're not a catering. We're not technically a CPG company. We're in this weird, like, gray space. So we've had to learn a lot along the way. We've been blessed to have good talent and to train good talent. And early on, just investing in software and tech to help us along the way, that really helped us differentiate. And then ultimately, what it comes down to, you asked earlier, kind of, you know, what our moat is. Customer service is a big one. We're human. You know, we still have a human CX team. The product is exceptional. So most people that come from Factor or some of these other bigger brands, they just go on and on about how much fresher and how much more intentionality goes into each meal that we make. You know, we source ingredients a lot more intentionally. So we're really a scratch-made kitchen. I mean, everything down to our mayonnaise and even our seasonings are made from house or made from scratch in-house. So like it's a lot of work that goes into it. And our customers luckily appreciate that. So that's a huge part of our moat.
I love that. And you guys are maintaining quality and, you know, consistency with your products at scale. And obviously that's a very big differentiator between the competition and you. And that's just incredible. another question I didn't want to have is that you mentioned, you know, the difficulties of, you know, from a, starting as a kitchen and, you know, increasing in scale. What has been some of the most difficult parts and challenges coming from that?
Yeah, I mean, just like in any other business, I think the hardest part is growth. And the growth requires people, right? Especially in our business. You know, in technology, you can invest deeper in your tech and scale tech much more rapidly, which is why you see much higher valuations or multiples. In our space, it really, you know, we have breaking points. For every 1,000 meals a week we do, it requires a certain number of hands. So now we have, I think, 50-something employees that work for us. And that was the hardest thing to learn. Going from zero employees to one was easy. Going from zero to four, still pretty easy. Until we reached about 10 or 12 employees, it was still relatively manageable. But my wife and I were both very much involved in the business still, not on the business. It wasn't until I started learning that I needed to train and delegate some of the things that I was doing that we were really able to reach kind of that scalability and offhands that we needed. So kind of my thing has been, you know, let go and let grow. So bring people in, if they can do the job 80% of the way, then that frees you up to then go and do more. So that's ultimately, I mean, really investing in people, investing in training, taking the time to slow down and work with people to get them up to speed, to do the job well. That's probably been the hardest, but also the most rewarding part of the business.
I love that. Definitely, definitely rewarding. And so you guys, you know, started in 2016 prior to, you know, this big wave of ready-to-eat meals. And scaling, how has scaling been in that space? You know, I know you talked about more of the production side, but, you know, sourcing the ingredients, was that a challenge?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I'll go back to, 2020 was a really weird year because we're omni-channel. So we have our online D2C side of the business. Then we have our brick and mortar grab and go stores. Then we have a catering division. So we had all these different pieces. The brick and mortar early on in COVID, we had to learn like what the rules were. You know, how do we still have customers come in? Because we were deemed essential, thankfully. So we were able to stay open. But then we made some pivots even during COVID years where we all of a sudden were distributing products for other people. So we saw ourselves as an actual distributor with refrigerated, you know, cold storage, cold chain logistics, because we had these refrigerated vans. And you had local businesses that were suffering because they couldn't move product around because there was, you know, breaks in logistics, not just because of COVID, but because of stimulus checks as well, people not showing up for routes. So we started to do different parallel things, if you will. The hardest part, though, so that was just a year of a lot of adaptation. We were just thankful to survive it. You know, we actually did thrive through COVID. In a way, you know, we thrived from a revenue perspective, but it was incredibly difficult for the next two and a half years to hire and maintain people. I would not want to relive that. So you can't grow and scale without the people. And we were, so we almost had to put a cap on growth because it was so hard to bring people in to work in food production. The environment has changed significantly in the last year and a half, so it's been a lot easier to bring in talent. We do need to pay a lot more now. So, I mean, our labor has increased significantly, as has our cost of goods. So those three things together really resulted in a much higher prime cost, and we were slow to adapt. So actually 2023 was a rough year because we did our highest sales. We've still grown every year consistently and had growth, thankfully, every year. But 23 was extra difficult. We had a failed software migration. Client or the vendor promised us all these things, and then it fell flat, and a bunch of our existing customer base was locked out. So you can imagine, I mean, we only bring in about 20% week over week as new customers. So 80% of our business disappeared for 3 weeks. Which in our space, you're working with very thin margins. You can't sustain cash flow with that amount of loss. So that was difficult, compounded then by increased cost of goods, increased cost of labor, and we didn't raise our prices. Like, our whole brand vision has been to deliver highest quality meals, highest quality ingredients, made from scratch at a price that's affordable and accessible to as many people as possible. So sure, we could go charge, you know, $17, $18 a meal and really go for the elite, if you will, or this high income bracket. But we wanted to deliver our product to as many people as possible, because that's the only way we're going to see real change in health, right, across the board. So that was a struggle, because we were pushing up against, you know, our mission and our vision. And slowly we started to make small incremental increases. So since COVID, we've actually only increased price, I think, about 20% overall, which is barely anything. And you think about a coffee pre-COVID, you could get a cappuccino for $4 or $5, right? Now you go out, it's $7.58 every time you get a latte or coffee. You go to the restaurant, I mean, even fast casual, you're paying, you know, double-digit numbers at Chipotle and McDonald's. It's crazy.
No, absolutely. And you did touch upon a lot of things that I do want to cover. And I do want to mention real quick that it seems like you're very no compromises. And, you know, you can really see that in Vibrant Meals. You know, the quality you want to maintain, the standard you want to maintain, and at an accessible price point as well. And that really helps, you know, spread across the population. I did want to dive into how you guys deliver the meals. And you mentioned that during COVID, you guys actually distributed products for other vendors. Is that something that you guys still do?
So it was something that we did more so to help other brands that we knew personally back when we were still in Chattanooga. This is before we expanded to, you know, the majority of the Middle Tennessee, North Georgia. Ironically, I actually had a conversation with a local brand that has 13 stores that needs help with cold chain logistics. And they process cold pressed juices and some other products that are shelf unstable. And so that's been a conversation that's resurfaced, because our refrigerated vans, which cost on average $60,000 to $80,000, and we have five of them, they sit for 4 days out of the week. So that's an asset that's just sitting there burning cash, essentially. And we were approached by this brand, and they needed, you know, kind of came out in conversation. We're just kind of sharing some stories. And he was like, "Hey, would you guys be interested in distributing again?" And I was like, "You know what? Sure. You know, I'd explore the idea. I'd give my drivers more hours, give us more use on the vans, just figuring out like, what are the economics of that?" And then real quick, I'll touch on this, just kind of why we deliver the way we do. So we're hand delivered. That's another one of those things that sets us apart. We're hand delivered because we tried shipping, and the shipping success rate was just so low, with packages arriving damaged. You know, just less care goes into the final last mile delivery, versus with our own employees, our own vehicles, we're able to control everything from start to finish. So that's been huge for us. And so many people said, "Why don't you do shipping? You can do nationwide. You can spread out, you know, and we have this huge influencer base, but we can't even service 90% of that demographic because they're across the country, right?" So as much as it's tempting, we've learned to just niche down, stay in our lane, do what we do best, continue scaling slowly, and not pursue. And that was the challenge for me, learning to change my mindset from like tech founder, where you have astronomical growth, to something like this, where you need to be slow and intentional with how you grow. It's also much more capital intensive. It's people intensive. And if you do it wrong, that's a quick way to die. And a lot of meal preps did close their doors in the last few years. So wow, we definitely want to avoid that.
Absolutely. And yeah, coming from the tech world, what has been the biggest challenge, you know, getting into the DTC space? You did touch upon just now, you know, you're limited physically in how much you can grow, because with tech, it's just completely scalable.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, tech, the access to resources that we can build on our own has become more prevalent. So we use things like Airtable, which are relatively cheap databases that we can spin up that help us a lot. You know, obviously the rise of GPT, like we're learning new ways and how we can use that, or train agents to help in various aspects of our business from the administrative side. So although we have a heavy production and delivery team, our back end office is relatively small. It's like 3-4 people on the office side. The biggest challenge, though, from a tech standpoint, has more to do with probably distribution or customer acquisition, I guess I should say. Pre, let's say, 2022, converting customers on Meta and even Google was extremely cheap. I mean, we were having ridiculous double-digit ROAS on ad spend. So, I mean, we'd be pushing out, you know, 30, 40x return. And I wish I spent more on ads back then. Very cheap to acquire customers. And you also knew where the customer's coming from. Then somewhere in the middle, you know, iOS launched some privacy things. Other people launched privacy things. You have all these different layers now that have made attribution so hard to determine. And it's gotten significantly more expensive. So we've almost throttled down from, I mean, what we were at one point spending maybe $40,000 a month on ad spend, and now we're down to maybe $4,000. So that gives you an idea of the scale that we shrank. The challenge now has become, well, how do we acquire new customers outside of the organic referral marketing? Is that still our strongest driver? So that's been an ongoing question mark, is what is the most efficient, cost-effective way to acquire new customers? And honestly, for now, it's been a lot of old school in-person events and things of that nature, which again, are hard to scale. So everything that we do seems to be hard to scale.
Well, I really love the bootstrap approach that you guys are taking and doing everything everything you guys are doing, you know, with the shipping and the delivery, and really trying to figure out ways and different channels to spread the vision, to spread Vibrant Meals. I do have another question concerning the delivery. You did mention that you're exploring the possibility of, you know, distributing for other products. And you did mention that the vans are just sitting there 4 days a week. Are you guys mainly delivering on the weekends, or why 4 days?
Yeah, so the way we operate is that we take in orders up until Friday morning, and then we deliver on set days. So Sunday, Monday are our only delivery days. Now, outside of that, we do catering deliveries, but those are delivered typically with smaller vans that are non-refrigerated. So yeah, that's just kind of a weird, operationally, it makes sense for us to batch cook that way versus a continual. If we had a continuous delivery cycle, it would be significantly more expensive for us. So this way we're able to batch deliveries in areas. So if you're going through an area of town, you're delivering 20, 30, 40 drops instead of maybe a handful. So that's just been a more efficient way for us to do that, minus the fact that we have these vans that are sitting. And we've started to implement or lean on third-party delivery partners that are local. So they will, you know, almost like an Uber Eats, where they'll come in and they'll do a lot of the smaller downtown routes, if you will.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Other than the 2022, you know, return on ad spend, wishing you had spent more on ads, what's something that you would tell yourself when you first started in 2016 and, you know, during COVID as well?
That's a good question. Honestly, I would have. So in 2020, we were still sub 20 employees. I would have probably told myself, hey, build out your SOPs faster, learn to trust your employees more quickly. And if they break trust, you know, obviously hire slow, fire fast, right? But you hire people so that they can do a job and so that they can also have the, what's the word I'm looking for? They also receive validation in doing the job that you even trust them to do, right? Not trusting people to do their job, you're just micromanaging. Nobody likes a micromanager, right? And not that I was necessarily micromanaging, I was just holding on to too much. And then I wasn't able to execute, you know, 60 to 70% of the way that I would have deemed successful in that case. So learning to delegate sooner and to trust people sooner with some of the more important things. Even something as simple as like, we didn't hire a bookkeeper until end of 22. You know, I was still doing the books regularly and looking at how much time I was spending on that. I mean, on one end, it was good because I had such a strong pulse on our numbers. But at the same time, I wasn't doing anything that was revenue generating. you know, it's passive work, you know? So I like to think of everything that I do now as like, all right, is this growing the company or is this maintenance? If it's maintenance, who can I delegate to and how can I delegate it and what's it worth, right? So learning kind of that cycle sooner would have been beneficial. I got turned on to Patrick Lencioni. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He has this thing called Working Genius, which is phenomenal. It's kind of like Enneagram for more professional settings. And it really helped unlock a lot of things for me, as I understood better, like, oh, okay, I'm an inventor or I'm a, you know, a galvanizer. I don't have as much of the tenacity element. So I need to find people that love administrative work, detail work. And I didn't know that that's something people loved. And turns out there are people that love that. So yeah, that's probably the biggest unlock for me, that had I learned that sooner, maybe we could have experienced some more productive growth earlier on. But other than that, I mean, I wouldn't change anything with our trajectory and what we did.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I have spoken to previous founders before, and there seems to be a common thread of, you know, especially since you're very hands-on, there seems to be a common thread of being hesitant to let go. And, you know, once you start to do so, it seems counterintuitive, but once you start doing so, it just unlocks a new game. Which does lead me to my next question. Where do you see Vibrant Meals in 3 to 5 years?
Well, we may be building 2 restaurants, which is Vibrant Meals adjacent, but it will be under kind of a different brand-ish. So that's kind of venturing into new territory, which we're really excited about. Vibrant Meals will continue to grow. We're looking to add new markets. We're already in talks with people, looking to expand distribution. We've got a great partner that we're also talking to that'll help expand our distribution more quickly. We were building out a new production facility, but we put that on pause until we finish these restaurants, just to see how those go first. Also had twins a couple months ago. So, I mean, raising 4 kids while doing all that, I'm trying to figure out, like, all right, how much. That's another thing that I've learned is, like, I can't take it all on and do it well. So I'd rather take on less and just execute that with excellence than go into the other things. Or if I know that I have the people in place, you know, then I can kind of outsource more quickly, right? Since I've learned to delegate now we can really move at a different pace, just because I have people ready to deploy in different areas. But yeah, I mean, we're looking to just continue doing what we're doing and growing it again, intentionally, not accelerate. You know, we've had a lot of people interested to invest and bring us capital, but we really don't need the capital right now unless we go extremely aggressive and build out a second facility and run 2 facilities, because we'll always kind of maintain a hub and spoke model. We want to keep our kitchens, you know, within a 200 mile radius of all of our customers. That's just important for us. But yeah, I mean, we're just taking it day at a time. You know, we have some ambitious goals with Vibrant, but then we're also taking a small detour with the restaurants. And then if those take off, you know, we may be adding several more of those around the Southeast. So
I love it. Love to hear it. You did mention that, you know, you just recently had twins, and Romana, she did take a step back from the company to help out with the kids. How do you manage, you know, running the business between the business and spending time with your family?
Yeah, great question. I'll tell you this. So back to the 2020, 2022 period, that's when my first 2 daughters were born. So first was born in 2020, then the second was born August of 21. So back to back, but I wasn't able to be present then just because I was still running around. We had some crazy situations happen at work. We had
peak of COVID too.
Peak of COVID. We had 3 employees pass away from ODs, which was extreme. I mean, that was a really, really dark, dark season. And one of them was our oldest employee. She'd been with us for going on 5, 6 years. So that was heartbreaking. But in the midst of that, I'm having to pick up all these pieces. I was helping pack orders, helping in the kitchen, delivering meals, you know, and couldn't really be there for the family. So this time around with the twins, I've been able to be more present. And it's only because I have people that I can trust now that are running the business. And that's just been such a freeing feeling, because it's allowed me to be more present with my family. So, you know, whereas I used to maybe work 60, 70, 80 hour weeks because of necessity, because I had to just keep the lights on, right? I mean, we were dependent on this. now I maybe work, you know, closer to 20, 30, but it's more meeting with team members, it's not actual cog work, if that makes sense, right? Like I'm not part of any of the cogs that are required to keep everything running. There's some small little things here and there, but the requirement for me to be present is less and less and less from an operational standpoint, right? Now I've served more as the leader of the company, leader of the managers, you know, making sure they're equipped, pouring into them. And that's been super life-giving because then it's also given me the time and space that I need with my family. Because now I can work, you know, and becoming a parent, you learn to be so much more efficient with time. You have to, because you have less of, you know, you lack sleep. So that obviously takes a toll on you. Then you have other demands. I mean, we have girls in a co-op, so we homeschool, but they're in a co-op. So a couple times a week I'm picking up or dropping off. So that takes time out. I can't go to work anymore from, you know, 6 to 7 p.m. at night. So there's a mindset shift that needs to happen and change there, but it's been all for the better.
Absolutely. Well, I love that. I love that now you're able to take a step back and really, you know, prioritize your family, and especially with twins, you know, that's got to be a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
So before we wrap, what do you hope that people say about Vibrant Meals in, you know, 10 years from now? And what legacy are you building?
Yeah, this is actually part of what kept me. One thing I didn't mention is during COVID, I started a software development agency, mostly kind of out of fears, like, all right, what's going on in the world? Let me do something that I used to do, you know, much higher profit, higher margin. And my wife for the longest time was like, hey, get rid of Vibrant, just do this thing full time. But it never sat right with me. Like I never had full peace about it. And I think it's because it was so much less fulfilling work-wise. Even though it was rewarding financially, it was less fulfilling because of the impact that we're having on people's lives through Vibrant. So yeah, I mean, legacy, you know, what we want to be known for is, and this is where like the entire team gets all the credit because they're all bought in on the vision now. And it's been incredible even to see like my head chef over the last few years, like really dial in like his own health. Like he was 300 pounds 2.5 years ago. And now he's down to 200 pounds. Like he himself has bought into the vision of a healthier lifestyle. He has more energy. I can see that he's got more joy in his life. He's able to play much more with his family without tiring out. His work performance increases. So ultimately it comes down to just being able to give people a better quality of life. Having lived overseas and coming here, like that's been such a shocker. And really lately diving into more of the science behind why we're so sick in America and how bad our food system is. Like we're really at the forefront of trying to eradicate that, change that, you know, get into hospital systems, you know, reframe people's minds, educate, you know, and push against this huge, you know, big ag, big food system that is really poisoning us. And so now I feel even more tasked with the responsibility to kind of continue to be at that forefront and push that forward and continue to deliver an exceptional product without compromise, because people will feel the difference. And when they feel that difference, everything else in their life is improved.
Absolutely. And I do love that. That's, you know, you're really very mission oriented, and it shows, you know, the impact that you're having on these people. And it's absolutely incredible. Well, Marco, this has been an amazing conversation. Where can people find you?
I've been pretty active on LinkedIn the last 90-100-ish days. So I post a lot of stuff there that some may be more controversial, kind of exposing, you know, again, the food system, but also bringing in like dad life, girl dad stuff. A lot of what we're doing as a family. So that's probably the place I'm most active. I'm also on Instagram. You know, marco.biscardini, I think is the handle. Yeah. Or you find us at Vibrant Meals, myvibrantmeals.com.
Love it. Well, we'll make sure to link everything in our description and make sure to spread the word. Well, thank you so much for us, Marco.
Yeah, thank you, Ren. This was fun.
Sweet.